The scripture reading today is from Matthew 5, verses 1 to 12. That is the Beatitudes. I'm going to read it from the Message, so the Message version, and just to give you a fresh kind of feel for these words. You're blessed. And when Jesus saw his ministry drawing huge crowds, he climbed a hillside. Those who were apprenticed to him, the committed, climbed with him. Arriving at a quiet place, he sat down and taught his climbing companions. This is what he said. You're blessed when you're at the end of your rope. With less of you, there is more of God and his rule. You're blessed when you feel you've lost and what is most dear to you. Only then can you be embraced by the one most dear to you. You're blessed when you're content with just who you are, no more, no less. That's the moment you find yourselves proud owners of everything that can't be bought. You're blessed when you've worked up a good appetite for God. He is food and drink in the best meal you'll ever eat. You're blessed when you care. At the moment of being careful, you will find yourselves cared for. You're blessed when you get your inside world, your mind and heart, put right. Then you can see God in the outside world. You're blessed when you can show people how to cooperate instead of compete or fight. That's when you discover who you really are and your place in God's family. You're blessed when your commitment to God provokes persecution. The persecution drives you even deeper into God's kingdom. Not only that, count yourselves blessed every time people put you down or throw you out or speak lies about you to discredit me. What it means is that the truth is too close for comfort and they are uncomfortable. You can be glad when that happens, give a cheer even, for though they don't like it, I do, and all heaven applauds. And know that you are in good company. My prophets and witnesses have always gotten into this kind of trouble. Amen.
So now it's my turn. Lucky you. I count it as a privilege to be allowed to speak after. Those words just knocked me out. Eugene Peterson was so brilliant in that translation because it just puts it a whole different way. So it is a privilege to stand here, but I have to tell you, the weeks and days leading up to this moment right here have not been easy for me. Imagine my surprise when I realized that it was only a year ago when I also spoke on the Beatitudes, except it was maybe next week instead, or whenever it is that falls on Remembrance Day. And what I did was paired the Beatitudes with the Decalogue, because those are two very important text passages for me. And so even though maybe I could blame it on chemo brain, you know, it would be bad for me to get up and basically say the same things that I said a year ago. And actually, 2 years ago in November was the other time that I was speaking here in the last few years. And I was speaking on the Hall of Faith, Hebrews 11. Again, a favorite passage, but we have been soaking in some of the most beautiful sermons. It's kind of like if you imagine soaking in a bath of John's words that Pastor Alan and Pastor Tom have been blessing us with over the last couple of months. The series was called Exploring the Light, Life, and Love of God, which kind of says it all. I mean, you can't really top that. So I sort of felt when I kept getting asked, so what text are you going to speak on? What's your theme going to be? And I'm thinking, I don't know. It's a tough act to follow. Let's just say that. So where to go with it? What I realized that when I was talking about Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, what draws me to that piece is that It was important to my dad, and so it's something that that is really close to my heart. But actually, before I go there, I have to say, I'm a different person now than I was 1 year ago and certainly 2 years ago. I got a diagnosis for stage 4 breast cancer in December of last year, kind of an early Christmas present that I am still unwrapping the blessing of. I turned around when we were singing the songs and told Darlene we're all in big trouble because I was already crying during those songs. I'm a different person now. I'm undoubtedly standing in front of you because of prayers, because of God's blessing, but also because of the prayers and support that I have received from all of you. So the first half of this year, I spent a lot of time answering people's concern and questions like, how are you? I was joking yesterday with a friend saying, somebody I haven't seen in a very long time, and she was saying, how are you? And kind of wrinkled her forehead when she said it. Now, I know what she meant was, like, how are you doing? But I was teasing with her saying, I thought I was okay until I looked at your face, and now I'm thinking maybe you know something I don't know. But we've moved on. Last week, I think it was, Alan and Tom and I went to Blythewood to attend a Toronto Baptist Ministries pastor appreciation lunch. And there were a lot of people there that I hadn't seen in a while. I served as TBM director for, I guess, about a year. But lots has happened in my family, and it was something I had to step away from. And I didn't really want to, but I just needed to do that. So there's one man in particular. He's from one of the Chinese churches, like in Scarborough, the very other end of the city. And we're talking. We had been working on ordinations and preparation of, like, new pastors who wanted to be ordained. So we had spent a fair amount of time together in 2022. And he's at the end of, you know, we're finishing up, and it's a chance to network. So we're, you know, kind of scurrying around. But just as I'm ready to step away, he says, by the way, I love your haircut. Hilarious to me, because I realized that despite the fact that, I mean, I haven't hidden it, but I know word kind of gets out, and he didn't realize that I had cancer. So that was kind of funny. So in a way, you know, my neighbor across the street said to me, one day when I stepped out, Annie Lennox, eat your heart out. So, you know, whatever. Like, so we've, you know, folks have moved from being really upset to life goes on. You know, I'm doing really well. There are changes for sure, but I'm doing really well. I don't have any pain really. The odd time, I don't know if I should tell you this, but the odd time I've had to use, in my family, we've gotten to calling it the cancer card. Like, if I need extra help on something, I sort of put on that face that my friend had and go, I have stage 4 cancer. And sometimes that works, you know, but I'm not doing it that often. Anyway, so what came to my mind about what can I do with the Beatitudes? What can I do even Hebrews 11, what can I do with this that means so much to me, but make it different for you so that you don't just think, I'm not mistaken, I heard her say this before. And what came to me was, now, is Sylvia here? There she is. If you were here last Sunday, you remember that, yeah, turn around and look and see. Sylvia, we were congratulating her in advance of her birthday. She turned 80 years old on Friday, which is excellent. Now, the great thing, besides the fact that she's doing well, the great thing about that was it made a connection for me, which was very special. 17 years ago on Friday, my mother passed. And although, as they say, when you lose a loved one, you don't ever get over it, you get used to it. And so certainly I'm used to it. I don't ever wake up and think, you know, oh, I got to tell mom, and then realize, oh no, she's gone. But November the 1st is always, for me now, it's mom's day, except now, in my mind, it's also Sylvia's day. I think it's a great thing that one is born, and so I remember it for that reason, but the other one passed away. So, catch myself here. My mom, and some of you were blessed to know my mom loved birthdays. My mom loved birthdays, and she loved celebrating them. She loved celebrating her own. She never minded reminding people, don't forget, my birthday is in a couple of weeks. It's on, you know, Friday. It's on Wednesday, whatever it was. My mom's birthday was August 11th. At the same time, my mom did a really good job of keeping track of other people's birthdays, of other people's important dates. Could be an anniversary. It could be like a wedding anniversary, but it could also be she would make note of when someone had passed away. And long before, though my mom was, you know, had good typing skills and used to use them when she worked for years and years and years, my mom kept a diary. And every year she'd get a new diary, usually the same kind, an agenda, and she would write in everybody's birth dates, like who's in January, who's in February, every single year. And she would send cards, and she would call the person, or she would write letters. That's just who she was. So interesting that in the year that, in 2008, when my mom passed away, my mom's favorite holiday was Halloween. Now, I know that for some Christians, they think of Halloween as not a cool thing to talk about because devils and demons, and especially now, holy cow, everyone dresses as like scary ghosts and goblins and really creepy things, whereas back in the day, you would be all kinds of things. One year, Charlotte reminded me, my youngest daughter, that I think it was the last year that she went out, and she had made a costume for herself. She was a hot fudge sundae. So she had on like a red hat, she had like chocolate sauce, and then the rest of her was, anyway. My mom loved Halloween. In her view, the Halloween was a beautiful time when people would come around, families, young families, little kids early in the night and older kids later on. She didn't care about that. It was only her job to open the door, give them candy, and just enjoy who they were. So, in the year 2008, my mom was living at Leisure World where Pat Murtaugh, Pat, wave. Can you wave? Everybody look around. She's at the back. Pat lives at Leisure World now. It's not called that. I forget what it's called now, but that's where my mom was, right by the Tim Hortons on Lawrence. And so she had come to a point where she never lost her mental acuity, but what she did, she was bedridden. And so, and the thing that she had wrong with her was called, I think, myelodysplastic syndrome, which means that her bone marrow had stopped producing blood. But there came a point when she didn't really like going for the transfusions, and it was getting more and more frequent. She was part of a blood study, like a clinical trial thing. And so when she knew that it was time for her to go, that she was dying, she was absolutely fearless and cheerful because she knew where she was going. There were a lot of people that she couldn't wait to see again because that's in her head, that's what it was. So my sister San and I took turns near the end. We didn't want to leave her alone, so they put a mattress beside her bed, and we would take turns staying overnight with her so that if she woke in the middle of the night and needed something, we would be able to help out. And I happened to be there on Halloween night. Of course, in Leisure World, there were no trick-or-treaters. I don't remember that the nurses dressed up or anything like that, but my mom was very happy to be there. She hardly even opened her eyes, but she was still like right to the end. You knew that she was there completely. It wasn't like she was slowly fading away in that way. But I remember being awakened in the early hours of November the 1st by a young nurse who said to me, you know, she's gone. And so as time went by, I mean, even in that first year for my siblings, we talked a lot about how with all the crying and everything, the upbeat part was she made it through Halloween, you know, because Mom loved Halloween. It sort of makes sense that she wouldn't have died for Halloween. But let's talk about All Saints Day now. It's not something that that Baptists practice. Typically, in general, Protestants don't celebrate All Saints Day. It tends to be a Catholic thing. And you know, with the Catholics, my understanding, which is limited, is that a saint, first of all, is dead. A miracle has happened. And it has to be a miracle that can be proven. So not just you think the person was wonderful, and so I'm going to nominate them for sainthood. It had to be a miracle. And I think also they vote on it. Like, not like an election, like what's coming up, and I'm not going to go there, but like voting on it. So, but that's not what saints are. Saints are, and by the way, my uncle, who was an Anglican priest in Arizona, was positively thrilled. He and my mom, like there were only two of them, no other siblings. He was very proud to claim that his sister had died on All Saints Day. He thought that was kind of like a boost for him in his life. We sort of chuckled about that. But so saints are basically, like you think of a saint, if we talk about saints, just in the sort of common vernacular, people will think that a saint is somebody who's really, really, really good. Like they don't do any bad things, and in general, something that you could kind of think to aspire to. And the other thing, the challenge for us, particularly, you know, as Protestants, as Baptists, is that we also know equally well that we are all sinners. So the truth is, Jesus, when he was taking his disciples up the hill and talking to them, he was taking not just his disciples, but saints, anyone who is baptized, who follows Christ, is a saint. I'm going to take a poll here. Raise your hand if you think there are any saints in this room. And I mean, before I said that about we're all, you know, anyway, who thinks there's a saint in this room? Few hands here, there. Raise your hand if you think you know a saint, and that's going to become important later. Yes. Not going to ask you to name names, but the message, I think, that Mika read, and I just love that. I just love that translation sometimes, because it really, for verses in Scripture, something like the Beatitudes that we're so used to, to hear it in like a fresh voice is so powerful. So Peterson does a great job. And the other thing I like, and you're going to like it too, is that Peterson kind of unpacks it to the point that I don't have to explain it for you. He said exactly what it is. He's really like pulled it apart and basically preached to all of us. So Mika, good job. You actually delivered the sermon right there. At a preaching conference last week that I attended, there was a man, Paul Scott Wilson, who teaches at Emmanuel, but he's a very well-known homiletics scholar. And he was saying that to a workshop, like to a room full of preachers. So this many people, but they're all preachers with a lot of practice, not like me. I preach here and there, but I don't get a lot of practice at it. I'm talking. Where's Glenda? So Glenda told me when I went to see her at the end of the service, you know, trying to get to people before everybody flees when the service is over. I got to Glenda and I was telling her that I needed prayer because I was preaching this week. And you know, Glenda, don't preach, you talk. And I thought, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing that she just said, but so here I am, not preaching, I'm just talking. So the keynote speaker, Paul, is talking to us, and he's saying to this group of pastors, and these are people that do it full time, he's saying to them, when you approach a text, you should be prepared that it's going to surprise you. In other words, we know that it's the living word. We've heard that before, and we know that it's true. It should surprise us. So that's exactly what happened for me as I was preparing for today, for this moment. A few comments about the Beatitudes. My dad was a fan, as I mentioned before, but particularly my dad used to, here's a fun fact, Mahatma Gandhi. You guys know who that guy was? I don't know. Yeah. So Mahatma Gandhi he used to read it regularly. He called it eternal wisdom, and he would read it often. He was one of the greatest national and civil rights leaders of the 20th century. So, some of this stuff I've covered. My energy is lower, and you know, as I've said, I'm a different person. But one of the things that I've always known, and I want to go back to school. I've been wanting to go back to school for a long time, because even though when you go to seminary, they teach you a lot, we never stop learning, at least like, you know, a lot of us, lifelong learners, right? You want to continue to grow. One of the things that had occurred to me early on was that time is the most sacred currency. Sherry Lynn did such a good job of talking about finances, and true that the love of money is evil, is the root of all evil, but it's the love of money. It's not the money itself that's evil, because money does important things for us. It's a currency. But another kind of currency is the time that we're given. So I've attended a few funerals. The group that I'm still connected with at Daybreak, the Larch community in Richmond Hill, we dance, spirit movers, and we dance. Some of the dancers are in wheelchairs, and some of them are verbal, some of them are not. But so we've been asked to dance at funerals here and there. And that is like just, it's such a fun thing, and I love to do it. But I have to tell you that in this year, I have felt strange sometimes to go to a funeral for someone who died unexpectedly. And here I am still alive, stage 4, but, you know, here I am, you know. I mean, I'm going to die sometime. We all are, but probably I'm not going to die soon. That's what my kids get. They've made me stop talking about the when I might die. But, you know, we know it's coming and whatever. But so Steffi over here, Steffi Wave, she's so shy. When I used to try and get her to come up and read scripture and stuff, she's like, no, 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 no. Anybody but me, I'm not going to do it. In the spring, I got invited to dance at the Baptist Women's worship that was happening on the Friday night before they were having their conference in Hamilton. And I had been asked to dance and put together a piece which would simultaneously attest to my faith statement, why dance is a holy thing for me, as well as to physically dance with the people there. And Steffi and my daughter Felicity, people whose talents I could never afford, gave so much time to me to put something together. And it was really powerful that night. People really did appreciate it. That was such a great thing. So, I am hardwired for connection and relationship. And I've almost been overwhelmed at points with the outreach and support. Now I'm ready for a picture of Andrew, if I can get it. So, but I have to give you a little backstory about this guy. So you can see this man, who is up here, used to be, when I knew him 25 years ago, he was called Twinkie. Now, if you think what the Twinkie calls to mind is maybe somebody kind of like chunky, he's clearly outgrown that. But we've stayed in touch. He kind of keeps track of me and stuff, and we've just, you know, off and on run into each other. He lives in Innisfil now. I asked him if he could come today, but he wasn't sure he could manage it. But this sweater that I'm wearing, amongst the angels, he knocked on the door of our house during the pandemic one night, like around 10 o'clock, and go to the door, and it's Andrew, and he's, you know, like that, standing in the door. Andrew, like, good to see you. And he had this t-shirt and then another sweatshirt, I think, for Rob and I. He had brought us, this is a project that he was involved in, and he wanted to just give us each a copy of that, like, you know, an article that he was proud to be involved in. So now I'm back to why this is so important and why this was such a blessing to me and why time is such a sacred currency. My daughter is a working musician and has traveled all over the world with her music, playing with different bands and different musicians, but she's been everywhere. I was talking to Brad Saunders at a little get-together yesterday, and Brad was kind of mock frustrated with that. He says, you know, I kept trying to, like, find out from her where she was going to be so I could go and hear her. But every time she'd tell me, like, 20 minutes before the show and where it was. So he was sort of, you know, now, and then he said after that, admittedly, it was only, you know, and the thing is, keep in mind, Brad also travels around the world. So the possibility of the two of them, like, being at the same place at the same time is pretty great. But whenever Felicity would get back from one of her trips, and particularly she would go out to BC fairly often, I've done a fair amount of traveling, but kind of in a limited span. I've been to California a couple of times, but other than that, I was born in Ohio, and I've spent most of my time in Ontario, not too far from Toronto or Weston. So every time Felicity would get back from British Columbia, I'd say, I want to go to British Columbia. I've never been there. And she'd say, Mom, great idea. We should go. Let's do it. And I know she always meant it, but the years rolled by. Well, this year, after the chemo treatments were finished, my hair was gone, but at least the chemo treatments were finished, and we, you know, it was like another sort of chapter. Felicity said she had some dates in to play in British Columbia. She said, we're going to do it. And she organized a trip for us. So we went to British Columbia together, and it was magic. It was like, I will never get over how, you know, how time is different. Time kind of expands. Like, to God, all time is the same. Well, in that way, when you go on vacation, you might go for a week, or you might be lucky enough to go for 2 weeks. When you're back at work, if you have a job that you don't adore, by the end of the first day or the second day, you're saying, man. And somebody will say, how was your vacation? And you have to stop and think, oh yeah, right, I had a vacation. Where did I go again? It's like it just kind of evaporates. Well, on this trip that we took together to British Columbia, the week felt like a month. It was just, it was so great. So when I got back from Vancouver is when the picture, yeah, thank you again for that, is when I get this text message from, hold on, from Andrew. And so it's this picture, and then this is the message. Oh, and I have to tell you that, no, I'll tell you that after. I was just talking about you the other day to a friend The person doesn't know you, but I was letting them know about how I got my very first job ever. The impact you have had on my life will never go unnoticed, and I just want to let you know I will forever love you for that. And always looking out and favoring me over a lot of others in the community, I didn't even get to really appreciate it back then, or maybe even notice it. Maybe because I was young. But you always had my best interest and wanted to see me do great. And I really do appreciate you and all those things you did for me. And then there are four blue hearts. And then a P.S. Don't cry, LOL. Well, when I got this text message, I was actually driving my grandson Pierce to a swimming lesson. And I had handed the phone back to him. He's a slow reader. And he just switched from French immersion to English. So I thought, you know, anyway, he's reading this message to me. But by the end of the message, I'm kind of wiping at my eyes and he's laughing. He says, Grandma, you're crying, aren't you? And I said, like, yes, be quiet. Well, that was beautiful. And I have cherished that and thought about that, not because those, you know, like I'm better than anybody else, but like any of you, John, I know you have had this as a teacher. Anybody that has worked with someone for a significant period of time, and then you don't see them for a long time, you see them again and they do remember you. They do, you know, and that's a beautiful thing because we make a difference in each other's lives all the time. And I have a project that I'm working on is actually to create a kind of a 25 years later newsletter and to send it out to all the people, which would be like a lot of you here who supported me when I was at Frontlines to be the director there because the seed that were sown took, you know, like the work that you supported continues long after. You think about what you did, the money you gave, the ways that you were involved, all that kind of, all those things. So I'm working on a project about that. But I kept wondering how I could share that. So I was praying about it, but, you know, sometimes you pray and you think, you know that God answers prayers, but you don't feel the confidence of it in a moment. So I tell you, I was really concerned about speaking today. But I prayed, so there was the preaching conference, and then like I'm more nervous than ever, I actually considered trying to record somebody else's sermon and just pretend it was mine, but you know, I'm not that good with technology and it would have been a dumb idea anyway, but so I'm in the basement where our television is and I'm like binge watching Hudson and Rex or something, like avoiding what I need to get to, really. And I hear a knock on the door. Rob wasn't home. I hear a knock on the door, and I know the dog might start barking and stuff, and we're still training her. So I race up the stairs, and it's Andrew. And, you know, hi, how are you doing? And, of course, you know, I'm crying. And I'm telling him what I'm going to do, that I want to do a newsletter, because I know that I need to get his buy-in, because I wouldn't just send that out without checking with him. And he said, it's so funny you say that, because he said, when I was writing that message, when I was texting you, he said, I was tearing up. And he's going, like, this isn't me. Am I having a Bonnie moment? Like, there's Andrew, you know, this that guy, like, tearing up. So we are, what inspired me about it was, it's not that it's about me. It's the fact that it made a difference to him back then. So the experience 25 years ago, so that's kind of in his toolkit. So when he's like mentoring somebody now who's ready to get their first job, he's remembering, like we got talking about those days and he was bringing up some things that I had long forgotten, but like that's just such an important thing. And then I thought about, there's another, you know, I talk about this a lot, Matthew 5:16, but there's a story that I want to share. So this is a cross that they made for me at the craft studio at Daybreak. And it's Matthew 5:16, because Matthew 5:16, and I'll just share the story again about it. Matthew 5:16 came to me as a verse. So I know there are people here who have, God gives them words, God gives them verses. I've heard so many times, you know, God gave me a word, God gave me this verse. And I love God. I've loved God my entire life, but I have to tell you, God never gave me a verse until I was at Front Lines. We were on one of our fancy schmancy field trips. We had gone to High Park. We took the bus down with packed lunches, hung around High Park, played, you know, petted the animals, did all that stuff. Now we're on our way home, and we're waiting at the Keel station for the bus to come back to Weston. Some of the kids were horsing around, and they weren't waiting ever so patiently. They were kind of, and I was concerned that there was a man standing kind of on the other side, not that me to the front pew, maybe away, and he's like this kind of watching us. Well, you know, they say body language, so if you see somebody like this, it sort of looks like you're expecting that that person might be judging you or something. At least that's where my mind goes. So now I'm really like, guys, knock it off. Like, we can wait till we get back to Front Lines. Just get on the bus and behave yourselves. But I'm sort of whispering and whatever. The bus finally comes. We all get on the bus. And this man comes in after. And he leans down to me and he says, I don't know what your relationship is with these kids, but it's obvious to me that you love them. So I'm kind of stunned, first of all, because that's not what I thought he was going to say to me. And like two breaths later, I hear a voice. I actually hear a voice in my ear, Matthew 5:16. Now, I couldn't. That meant nothing to me other than I know it's a reference to a Bible passage, but it isn't like, even though my dad was a pastor, like I didn't grow up knowing so many verses by heart that it meant anything to me. But when I got home and looked it up, let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven. And what I understood and came to understand through time is that that is, like, if anybody ever were to compliment me, because I don't take compliments well. Like, I'm kind of a deflector. Like, I don't like to be the center of attention in that way. But what that told, that having that verse let me know that if somebody were to compliment me, what I could do is say Matthew 5:16. I mean, if only that. If somebody looked at me, that's what I could say. And that was a blessing, and it was such a blessing. It was in my ordination statement. Almost there, guys. I've heard it said, and I think it's a common expression kind of, that when you're dying, that when somebody dies, their life flashes before them. So, like I said, I'm not dying soon. But what this last period of time since December has been for me is time kind of suspended, and just having these people appear from out of my past, remembering things. And so my friend Andrew inspires me, because that's really what we're all supposed to do, is to remember, like, when somebody means something to you, tell them. Don't be embarrassed that maybe they don't want to hear that. Don't think, don't think this or that. Just tell them. Don't second guess yourself. And even this verse, Matthew 5:16, let your light so shine. Just like the Beatitudes were not a recipe. Do this, 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 and then then everything's going to happen for you. It's more of like a wake-up call to notice things. And then, so let your light shine. That's not really an action. That's almost kind of a passive action. Let your light shine. But here's the sainthood part. Now that all of us are saints, and you know, every one of you here is a saint. Now that you know that, pay attention to when God brings someone to your mind or something, you can help that person's, you can help testify to the light shining in that person's life. You know, it's not just always like the personal testimony about how you came to faith, but it's noticing the lights in the brothers and sisters around you. We not only acknowledge the Christ light in them, we also give them the experience that they matter. Henry Nouwen wrote eloquently and prolifically about his experience of people with intellectual and physical disabilities at Daybreak in Richmond Hill when he lived there. He often wrote on the theme of beloved, the experience of being loved, beloved. I have found a second home at Daybreak, and I do know what he's talking about. People who the world expects very little of, if anything, are able to convey the message very well that you matter. Whether they are verbal or ambulatory or getting around on wheels or whatever, there's never a doubt that you will know exactly what that individual thinks of you. It's a place where some are drawn to help out because it kind of calls on the charity element of us, where we want to help someone else. But if you stick around for any length of time, you will find out that it's a mutual relationship. You help them and they help you. In fact, the core members at in the L'Arche communities are called teachers, because though the world expects little of them, they teach humility, just in who they are. They don't really care, letters after your name or how fancy your clothes are. They're just gonna tell you what they think. How many times do you leave a church service and think about someone that you meant to talk to or didn't or whatever, or maybe someone you did get to talk to? How are you doing? And they say, "Oh, fine," and then really you come to find out later, they're not fine at all. You know, it's over the course of the history of the church, people tend to come dressed up. I've been affectionately reminded sometimes that I'm wearing a dress today, that I can dress nicer too. Meaning, you know, it's nothing wrong with, you know, your scruffy clothes that you came with, but maybe you want to dress up next week. So it's just, it's very, very important that we notice one another. It's very important when you see another person that you make the time, that if you can't tell them right away, tell them later. We all matter. And nobody here on their own really thinks deeply that they matter. You all think, like, we tend to focus, because we're good Christians, on mistakes we've made, places we messed up, what we wish we could do better, words we wish we could take back. And Jesus reaches past all of that. We're going to be celebrating that in a minute. Forgiveness. Forgiveness because he loves us exactly the way we are, right here. He's really not asking us to be anything other than who we are, but so many times we're afraid to be ourselves in front of each other. It's simpler. Maybe you don't have time to explain what's wrong with you. You know, I know that I was guilty of that sometimes. How are you doing? Fine. And I never knew if somebody wanted like the full story of what the last treatment was like and who said what to me, or if they just want to know I'm okay for now. But anyway, so it is with sainthood. It's not about trying harder, being better, fixing ourselves. It's about embracing what we are, where we are, just as we are. I have another picture to share of my sister, San, walking with her prayer partner of many years, Betty Cullen. So Betty Cullen, in September, had a birthday. And if you were there that Sunday, my sister somehow worked magic. She talked to Mary Ellen and to Lucy, who were the worship leaders that Sunday. And normally we don't do this because, of course, the problem is if you start to acknowledge one birthday, then you have to acknowledge everybody's birthday. But I've already said some people want their birthday known and others don't. Well, my sister talked to them, and when I was talking to Mary Ellen about it, she said, Lucy did it. Lucy pulled it off, and we all sang happy birthday. But here's the part you need to know, the difference that you made to Betty. Betty hasn't been able to come to the church for years. She's older, and she just wasn't able to come. But she was listening to audio sermons before the pandemic when everything went like video, and you know, and you can get and you can have church from home. Long before that, she was listening to the messages faithfully every week. My sister's been praying with her for 30 years. I don't know, a long, long time. So that was Betty's birthday. Betty's son, and by the way, where's the camera? Hi, Betty. Betty's son, John, was visiting. He lives in the Maritimes now, and he came to be with her on her birthday. So the two of them sat and watched the service together after the editing got done and it went online. So what a gift we gave to her. And now I'm going to give you just a couple of minutes to think to yourself, who can you think of? Who comes to your mind? And it's not a forced thing. And I'm not checking up on anybody, but think of, for sure, God will bring it to your mind. Somebody who doesn't know maybe how much you love them. Someone who doesn't know how much you care about them. Someone, think about that. And then think about taking the challenge. We're just going to take a minute to do that. And then I'm going to pray at the end. But I challenge you. Let that person know. Like, it can break this church wide open. We can cause Sherry Lynn to be like coming up here and going, whoa, stop giving, we've got too much money. It's really, really important that we make the best use of the time that God gives us. So just take a minute, please. Heavenly Father, you have dazzled us when we take the time to see the stars that you have placed in the sky. But bring us to the dazzle to notice the true blessing of the people you have put in our path, Lord. And Lord, also open our eyes to notice and to receive the difference that we have made to someone else, Lord. Because there's room at the table that we're going to be eating from in just a few minutes. There's room at the table for everyone, Lord. No one left out. You love us for who we are, not for who we wish we could be. Father, I pray for my sisters and brothers this morning that even something of what I have said would inspire them for the week that awaits them. You have numbered the hairs on our head. You know our last breath before we drew the first. You are with us in good times and bad. And just as John wrote, how can we say we love you, that we abide in your love, and forget to notice the people on either side of us. Lord, we are all full of the love that only comes from you. I pray that you will inspire us and crack open brand new ways to be generous, to be faithful, to step over our doubts, to step over our insecurities, to step over our concern that it's not the right time or I should be more prepared. Lord, for such a time as this, you have prepared us. I thank you and praise you for this place that has been my home for so many years. I just pray that you would continue to be with us now and in the days to come. In Jesus' name.